Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown here with a full crew in studio and some excellent guests just back from South America, where they've been introducing some wonderful technology to people. You'll be finding out more about that in our program today, as well as we'll be talking about helping your kids once they get to school with that brand new equipment. How do they deal with the college system there and getting hooked up to that? And we also have some great Internet Advisor takeaways for you. Absolutely free, just for you, coming up on the Internet Advisor. It's a good day to be here, just because it's a lovely day outside, and if you're an auto enthusiast, any weekend during the month of August is great, but especially during the Woodward Cruise, and it's happening all over the place. As I say, it's not just one weekend in August, it's been going on for a long time, but right now you could walk across the cars. Gary Baker, good to have you in-house here.
It's great to be here. You would think that I would learn to push the on button by the time, after 15 years. Happy birthday, Foster.
Thank you very much. Oh, I like that. Even a little theme. thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And we have cake.
I know.
And we'll share cake with our listening audience, virtual cake. Then go online to internetadvisor.net and see your smiling face.
We'll have it up shortly. Cake, so. Ed Riddell back from the wilds of Hocking Hills in Ohio with the Boy Scouts. Right?
That was a great trip. That was a 4.5-hour drive. Took the Boy Scouts there. A little nervous when you're running up and down trails that are 150-foot plunge. The kids run up and down like it's nothing. But we all came back safe and sound, and my nerves are back in order. It was a great time.
And Cal Carson, nice to have you here as well, of course.
Always a pleasure to be in-house, and it's good to be here, and happy birthday once again to you, even though I thought you had one of these about a year ago, didn't you?
Yes. He does that once in a while.
Seems to come around every year or so. Without fail, it comes around, but not always on this occasion of our show.
You know, it's repetitive, like a backup, like something you should do on a regular basis.
That's right.
But not only, this just comes once a year. Backups should come much more frequently.
Much sooner than that. Hey, that's a good cue for me to talk about something that we started with last week, which is getting our kids some of the best devices and best deals on them with Rick Broida for going back to school.
That's right.
And backup triggered in my mind that just as kind of a follow-up, this last week I took my twin granddaughters up to Central Michigan University, where they're now firmly ensconced in housing up there and getting ready for their first year there. They're going in as second-year students. But when we got up there, of course, one of the things besides getting the right color combinations and the bedspreads and everything else set up there, and bookcases and lamps.
Oh, and their special size sheets they need.
That's right. Besides all that, of course, you need to hook them up to the wireless system there, because hooking up to computers is not incidental or a fringe. It really is very much a part of everything goes there. Schedules are there.
Oh, everything.
Everything's right. Hooked up to it. So I had a fascinating experience, because when I went to hook them up to the system, and I wanted to kind of give a little heads up to folks out there, when you bring that brand new spanking equipment in, you may run into this. I kind of hope you do. At Central Michigan University, as soon as I hooked them up, and you have to come in, you have to set a great password up and everything else, they send down to you a piece of software that comes, the first thing, it drops onto your computer. And you have to allow it to do this. It goes through and scans your computer entirely to make sure that you've got proper security, etc. And if you don't, it won't let you on.
Just think if every internet service provider that you would connect with would have something like that.
You wonder why they don't.
And it would protect their systems. It protects all their users, right? So it would be a value add to all of us that would use them as an ISP.
Great point.
But it protects them, and it protects all of us that aren't on that ISP, because if they're infected, they can infect a whole lot of people in all sorts of networks.
So, yeah, and they're basically just looking to make sure you've got the essential security kind of thing. Do you have antivirus protection? Do you have a firewall? And things like that.
That put us out of business. if everybody did that.
Well, that's a good thing, I think.
I think it's a good thing.
Now, yeah, another thing I remember from my daughter going in last year is that they had a special note for kids with gaming consoles that you had to provide them information if you wanted a gaming console connected to the internet in the room.
Oh.
And I wonder what they would do for Macs.
Well, I hooked up two iPads,
oh.
And I'm trying to think of whether I saw the... When I hooked up the laptops, which were PCs, they were running Windows 7, I saw the program execute. I didn't see it on the Mac, so I'm wondering if the iPads did or not.
I don't think they do on iPads, and I'll tell you the reason why I feel that way is because it's more of a consuming device mm-hmm. than a creation device. So mm-hmm. it's not really putting stuff out as much as it's taking stuff in. Plus, I don't know of any antivirus that runs on iPad.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about the Macs as well.
Well, Macs is a good question.
Yeah, and I meant if they could provide free antivirus for the Macs, heck, if you can go to college and only pay $10,000 for your tuition and you get free antivirus software, I'm in.
Well, I was wondering, are there any other things, kind of quickly, before we get into a great program this week, John Barry is here with us. He's coming back to talk about his trip to Guatemala and Appropriate Technology Collaborative and the great things. And Tina Watson's along to talk about that as well. But before we get there, you are all three dads who have daughters within college systems at one point or other. Is there any other tips you would give? You know, once you got the equipment there, what are some of the other things you need to do?
Lock it up. The rooms, the first year, if it's the first year to dorm rooms, mm-hmm. the laptops disappear. They just disappear. So a lock to hold it onto the desk is one thing.
Okay.
I made sure I got my daughter one of those. And I also made sure she had a copy of the imaging CDs that when you first purchased the computer, if something happened to it, she had a way of restoring the operating system on there.
Good point. As a matter of fact, didn't Sherry have to do that one time at least?
Yes, I had to make a special trip out there. But what I had done is I just bought another hard drive for her because I had an image. So I imaged her computer after the manufacturer's image. What she went out there with was just the manufacturer's,
image.
And what I had was the manufacturer's image plus 3 months worth
of data.
When
you say image, essentially, that is taking with that ghost. For instance, a Cronus would be one of the tools.
A Cronus image, yeah.
But essentially what you do, folks, is you take an entire snapshot of the whole thing, operating mm-hmm. system plus programs, right?
Yep.
And files. Everything gets caught there. So that's
email settings,
a full thing of you. It's like your whole clone of your hard drive, literally a clone of your hard drive. That way, if something happens disastrous, you can at least go back to ground zero.
You exactly. know, and what I did is I sent an external hard drive,
yep.
and I'd already set up the backup to that external hard drive and send them both with Lauren. And, you know, that way it automatically backed up.
Good. Maybe, Cal, at the end of the program, we'll come back to this after we talk with our guests. But I put an article on the homepage as well at internetadvisor.net. It's talking about college internet hookup tips. And you can take a look at that at internetadvisor.net. Back in a second to talk about it, a great adventure for technology in Guatemala. Thank you for letting us into your lives with the Internet Advisor. Delighted to have you with us. By the way, we're around 24/7 at internetadvisor.net. Loads of information, like our show notes, which have lots of links in them. Well, our link, by the way, to our guest today was one that began, quite a ways back with a friendship between Gary Baker and one of our guests here, which you might just introduce her.
That's actually absolutely true. Tina Watson has been here many times. Welcome, Tina.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me always on birthdays.
Cake
was great.
Really?
That's right.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you don't have you don't have to eat virtual cake. You get real cake.
Yeah, that's right.
That's wonderful. Well, Tina and I collaborate on a career networking group called the Baker's Dozen. And actually, Tina does all the work, which is great. She does a wonderful job at that. And so we've had Tina in to talk to us about a number of different topics over the years here on the Internet Advisor. And one that you had just come back from Guatemala, I was very interested. As you started to tell me about that last year, this last spring, I said, Tina, we got to get, you know, the guy that started that and that you went with on the show. We did that last year, and that was John Barry. And John's welcome with us again, or here with us again. Welcome, John.
It's great to be here, and once the birthday cake was great.
It was nice to get you off the high road, because in the spring, I think it was in May, we talked to you when you had just come back from Guatemala. You and Tina had been there with your project, and you are the CEO, or I should say the director, at least, of an Appropriate Technology Collaborative. Explain that a little bit for folks, to set the scene of how you have come to be in Guatemala and taking some very bright people with you, some great projects.
Well, we design technology for low-income people, And our technologies are used worldwide.
Right.
Our workshop is in Guatemala. We've designed things like a solar refrigerator that you can make from locally available parts almost anywhere on the planet.
Incredible.
And that's for vaccine storage.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a big problem with vaccine storage in rural Africa, rural Asia.
Sure.
You can't keep things cold in the distant parts, in the really rural parts of those countries. And so a group of students from Michigan State went down to Guatemala with us, and they built a refrigerator that uses just solar power.
Incredible.
No electricity. It just uses heat from the sun. And
To cool things.
Yeah,
that blows my mind.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You put it, you just roll it into the sun, and it freezes stuff.
Wow.
And it has no moving parts. And these guys built a refrigerator from scratch in 4 days.
Incredible.
Now, can you imagine that, building a fridge from scratch in 4 days?
But what a wonderful application of the things that they're learning in school and these technologies. Liberating. Incredible.
Well, and also what ties in with this program particularly is that we get these drawings out to a lot of different nonprofits all over the world. My daughter was just adding them up. We're in 43 different countries.
Wow.
Through the internet.
That is incredible.
It's online. You can pick up the drawings for free. And so people all over the world are refrigerating vaccines because they can get to them online.
I hope you can get hold of this. In terms of open source technology, this is the definition of it. What the internet is best at, and it's brilliant.
Jen, what do you do for a day job?
This is my day job.
Okay.
Yeah, we are funded by some foundations and individual donations from people. We also are starting to sell solar lighting systems to replace kerosene lamps in people's houses. People that don't have electricity want to see at night, and everybody wants to see at night.
Sure.
And
for safety, as well as, for instance, for reading and things like that, has
incredible repercussions. Though, by candlelight or by kerosene lamps, it's hard to read. We can kerosene's expensive. People spend between 60 and 80 cents a week on kerosene to light their homes.
That's huge.
For very poor people, that's incredible. And so we sell a system that can be sold for 50 cents a week. Now, that doesn't sound like much money, but over time, we can collect enough money to pay for a solar system for people's houses.
Wow.
So they go from fumes and soot from kerosene lamps.
And fire in houses that are built of thatch.
Exactly. If you kick over a kerosene lamp, you can burn the house down. If you kick over an LED, nothing happens.
Yeah. Which so,
you stand it back up again.
So we have the solar lighting systems, and we're actually teaching a class called Circuits in Solar in Guatemala now. We taught that just after actually, Tina helped set the project up with us when we were in Guatemala in February. We've taught it a couple times, and we're now getting ready to teach the class for 2013.
Now, Tina, when you say you teach this class, you've got people who maybe haven't even had a grade school education sometimes. So how do you get people who start, you know, with, I'm thinking some of the people in Guatemala. I've lived in Latin America, and I know that very often getting any even the rudimentary basic education is very difficult. And when you're in the campo, it's almost impossible. How do you take people from there to circuits and solar?
Probably understood.
We start out with people that have basic numeracy and literacy skills.
Okay.
So this is it. We teach at a trade school, actually at a couple different trade schools. So they're people that have had education.
They've had some basic.
Yeah. We can't start with people that are illiterate.
But these are Mayan Indians, right? The indigenous people around Lake Atitlan there in Guatemala.
Exactly. For people who don't know, Guatemala has the highest percentage indigenous population of all of the Americas. Once you get outside of Guatemala City, it's a majority indigenous population
Mayans,
there.
Yeah.
So it's Mayan people. We're working with Mayans, women and men, to teach them about solar power.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible.
So, Tina, how did you run across John? I mean, I've known you. You've gone to some tremendous places, zip lines through the treetops and, you know, in New Zealand and Australia and many other fabulous places. But this time you went to work and really help out.
Well, I ran into John a couple of years ago at a networking event. And I learned about Appropriate Technology Collaborative at one of their fundraisers. And then the trip that I went on in last February was the first time that ATC, most of the ATC projects are done with student groups. So last February was the first time that ATC had had an opportunity to go on one of these trips that was open to Friends of ATC. So
that was cool.
So wonderful.
We will have additional trips coming up next year where people can sign up to go do the same kind of thing that I did. In March and in August.
Yeah. Beyond students, right?
Beyond students.
Beyond students. And also, these are projects where you really get to do something meaningful. This is where you learn about solar power, and you actually install solar on a building that needs it, mm-hmm. and you work with Guatemalans to do the work.
I should mention, by the way, folks, if you link off, if you go to our homepage, Appropriate Technology Collaborative, you click on that, it'll take you off to their site, and you can see some pictures of some of the projects that you've done with the solar energy. But the second one I want you to talk about before we get to the break, because I find it fascinating, is the one where you're having people weave the blades of windmills. Am I right on that?
Exactly. Well, we're working with a group of University of Michigan students to do this. I wish Omar and Sita were here today to speak about it, but we're working with a women's weaving cooperative up in the mountains, and the reason for this is that women in Guatemala weave to earn a little extra income for their families. It's a tradition, and but they don't get paid much for their work. Right. They might work an entire week to weave something and get a couple dollars for it.
Beautiful, by the way, hand-woven stuff.
Like my shirt today.
Oh, wow.
And they don't make much for all the work that they do. And so we're looking at ways of creating green jobs, clean technology, and also increasing the value of the products that they create. So they're helping us. We actually had women weaving with Kevlar fibers. Imagine that. So we were and different varieties of fibers to try to come up with the right combination for making a wind blade that's strong and inexpensive.
Well, when you think about it, it's really hard for them to set up their own manufacturing plant to manufacture wind blades, you know, blades for windmills, but they can weave. This is something they know how to do, and if they know how to do it for this particular purpose, they can actually build a lot of the technology themselves. That's really what you're trying to teach them, right?
Yeah, we're trying to get a new market for a traditional material. So we're honoring the tradition of weaving. And actually, the wind turbine blades, we're using clear resin so that you can see the patterns that the women create in the blades themselves.
Oh, so cool. So they can personalize the windmills. Now, what are the windmills used for? Is it just for pumping water, or is it for creating power? What is it used for?
We're looking at creating power.
Okay.
One of the things we've discovered working in developing countries is that a small amount of power makes a big difference in people's lives. I talked about how just LED lights instead of kerosene lamps, that's a big change. And we'll continue this.
Yes.
You're right.
You got the cue. Great. John Berry with us from Appropriate Technology Collaborative, along with Tina Watson, who is one of the partners in that as well. And we'll be back to talk more about this adventure, especially I love this kind of revolutionary notion of teaching girls in particular about the circuits and solar and the impact that has in that culture. We'll be back to talk more about their classes and the impact worldwide of this free technology. You know, with the Internet Advisor over these last years that we've been on the air, we've followed technology and devices and things like that, and it always, matter of fact, our next hour will be involved in helping you solve your problems with your technology. But this program for me is very special. Having lived outside of the United States for a number of years, especially in Latin America, hearing about how this technology that we've been talking about today with our guest, John Berry, who represents Appropriate Technology Collaborative, and Tina Watson, one of the supporting members of that, and a longtime friend of ours. It just makes me feel so good, John, to hear about how you folks are creating this technology and sharing it worldwide, letting it loose, and making sure, and Tina and I were talking in the break, that what's built is something that they can do themselves. This isn't going to depend on expensive circuit boards from Hong Kong. This comes right out of where they're at.
Exactly. Moreover, they can build it, they can repair it, and they can maintain it. And so this becomes an empowerment project for the local people. They learn and take ownership of technology.
Now, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll see a picture on the front page there in our show notes of a young woman, an American woman, who is working with a Guatemalan woman in a native dress there, weaving one of those blades that you were talking about for the windmills.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also been involved in the solar project. One of the other things that you were talking about is the kind of a liberating course that you're teaching down there for girls.
Well, this spring we taught circuits and solar classes at trade schools in Guatemala. And this is where you learn basic circuit design. This is, for students that have basic numeracy and literacy skills.
They can count. They can deal with numbers.
They can add, subtract, multiply, divide, and write.
Right.
And they took the circuits and solar class. It was very popular. There's a waiting list for it. Yeah, but I noticed that 95% of the students were guys.
Oh.
And so I asked some questions. I asked the directors of the schools where we taught this, where are the girls?
Yeah.
And they said, girls don't take tech classes with guys.
Oh, listen, these are fighting words to the guys who are in the studio here, all of whom have very technologically inclined daughters.
Well, and actually, I started asking some of the young women students, and the women students are taking tech classes, but they're taking weaving and sewing. Right. And they said, you know, we're interested in solar, too. Solar is kind of cool. They understand that, that's a technology of the future. And so I asked, why don't you take a class? And they said, well, we don't take classes with boys. And
that's a traditional division in education. Often
exactly. In guys take the tech classes like guys take tech classes like shop and welding. Girls take classes like sewing and weaving.
Right. Home economics, another.
Exactly.
And these are Mayans. You know,
It was a matter of fact, I grew up within the Catholic parochial system that had come up the same kind of mentality to it as well. But you've broken out of that then, huh?
Well, yeah. We found out that the girls do want to take the class if they were offered a class. And so we always teach classes, by the way. When we say we teach, actually our Guatemalan staff teaches.
Right.
It's not white people telling Guatemalans what to do.
Right.
It's working with Guatemalans to raise the level of education.
Right.
So this is now women teaching young women in Guatemala about circuits, circuit design, and solar power, and how to install solar power. And then the girls asked, this is really cool. I love this. The girls asked, okay, once we learn all of this, can we get a job? And I thought, I would
the
like
to
do
that. The boys did not ask that.
The boys didn't ask.
The girls are a little advanced. I give them credit for that. So we are looking for funding to actually start a women's solar power cooperative.
Wow.
We think that that would be a viable business down there. And our model for starting businesses is that we will incubate a business for 5 years, where the first year we'll find the clients, we'll make sure that they have the jobs,
wonderful,
teach them the business school, teach them the business plan.
Right.
And then over 5 years, they gradually take full control of the operation. So the last year, we're just advising.
Now, folks, you've been hearing about essentially the heart of the Appropriate Technology Collaborative. John, you're the director of Atena. You are a supporter here. Are there other ways that people can support the work you're doing?
Well, something that ties with what we were talking about earlier here, going to school, the kids getting new laptops to go to college. We have a program called Laptops for Latin America, where if you have a used laptop that still has some life in it, a lot of people just put those on the shelf and they get the new laptop out, and about 10 years later, they dust it off and they throw it away. It'd be nice to not do that. We can accept those as charitable contributions to the Appropriate Technology Collaborative. They're tax deductible by law. So we have this Laptops for Latin America program, and the link on your website will link to that program.
If you go to our homepage, what John is talking about is a line right in the middle of internetadvisor.net. It says, for more information on, we'll talk about this in a moment, circuits and solar class that's coming up here in the United States that you can take. Also, Laptops for Latin America, you can send an email to, and then there's an address down there, info@apptechdesign.org. You just look at our homepage in the middle of that.
One of the best other links that you could click on is Tina's trip down there. And we have a link to that. And not only did she describe it very well, but there are photos. And it's remarkable. Yes. If you want to take a look at some of the good that they're doing down there, take a look at the photos there.
One of the other things that they can get involved in is the class that's being taught here.
Right. We were asked, we have what's called a meetup, the third Wednesday of every month, for people who are interested in working on appropriate technology. And the first question people asked in July was, you're teaching circuits and solar in Guatemala. I'd like to learn that here in the United States. And I said, we will teach you exactly the same class we teach in Guatemala. And you will learn about circuit design, how electricity works. You hold up your iPhone. How does it work? You can start figuring that stuff out. And then learn about solar power. And people will build a small solar power system in the class. So you will actually have the experience of putting all the parts together and making it work.
Now, where does that happen, by the way?
That will happen at MakerWorks in Ann Arbor on the 5th and the 12th of September.
And how much will it cost?
We're still working on that, but it's over $100, and it's less than $200. Well, the reason I say that is that we have to find out the cost of all the materials for the class.
Okay.
And it goes to support the program.
Okay. Would they allow me to generate enough power to run what in my house?
You could run two LED lights and charge your cell phone.
which is typically what a Guatemalan would do. This is using the same kits that we use in the classes in Guatemala. So the solar panel itself.
Oh, so we get to keep the kits.
Yes. You get to go home with solar stuff.
Oh, wow.
The solar panel
This is like
itself
the old kits. Remember those kits? The Radio Shack kits or the what were the other ones? Heath kit. That's it.
So the solar panel itself is about the size of a notebook computer.
Excellent.
So you get to walk away with all these goodies.
And this is going to be where again?
Oh, this will be at MakerWorks at Ann Arbor, which is on the south side of Ann Arbor. Just email us at info@apptechdesign.com, and we will send you directions on how to get there.
How to sign up.
And if this class fills, we'll have another one.
Send every kid that you have with a cell phone, and you can cut down on your electricity usage.
Well, Tina, you were talking about this during the break, and I want you to share it as well. It's kind of blew my mind that cell phones are a huge deal in Guatemala, especially in these remote villages where you are.
Right. The two needs that they have for electricity, one of them is the LED lighting that John talked about, but the other is cell phone charging. Mm-hmm. Because without electricity, you can't do that. So today, someone may take, if they need to charge their cell phone, they may walk a couple of hours, sit down where there's a place with electricity for a couple of hours and wait for it to charge, and then walk back home for a couple of hours. So that's a day's worth of productivity
just to
lost.
Just to charge your phone.
And the problem is, in Guatemala, you can purchase a used cell phone for about $1, and you can receive phone calls for free. So everybody has a cell phone, and it's on all the time. Then you have to charge it. Sure. And so that becomes a problem. So these wonderful gadgets that we have become troublesome for some people because they're just waiting for phone calls and charging once a week, and they lose a whole day's work.
Wow.
And usually when we get done with the cell phone and we donate it someplace, they don't have much battery left. Right?
So, no, you're right, yeah.
So these are not like cell phones with brand new batteries.
People should understand, too, as we're talking about this, you know, in the United States we have this whole infrastructure with copper everywhere or wires everywhere. In developing countries, typically called third world or developing countries, they are, in many cases, farther ahead than we are with cell phone technology. Like, for instance, getting it for free, essentially, and making calls for free. Because there's no infrastructure there.
In 1999... in Antigua, Guatemala, which was the capital for a long time in Guatemala, so it's an important city, they had two phone lines in the entire town.
1999.
Yes, I had a cell phone in 1999 that was more powerful than the entire phone in Antigua. Antigua.
Well, I remember going up to a town very close to where you're teaching near Lake Atitlan, and when we wanted to place a call, we had to go to a special building where there were two telephones, and you initiated the call, and then you went back down the street to a little cantina and sat there in the bar drinking, waiting for the call to actually connect, and then you'd have to run back down and talk on the phone. It was amazing. It was a two-hour ordeal just to place a phone call.
Yeah. This is wonderful. John, Barry, thank you so much for what you do with the Appropriate Technology Collaborative. Tina, thank you for your support. Thank you both for being here again. Please follow up if you're interested in this with the information on our homepage about both the circuits and solar class and laptops for Latin America. Do that email address. God
or
bless you both.
Or the meetup group.
Or the meetup group
as
well.
And participate in these designs.
That's excellent. Coming back in just a moment, we've
got an
Internet Advisor takeaway for you. I hope as you're listening to and enjoying the Internet Advisor, you'll treat our homepage, internetadvisor.net, as a great resource. Because in the show notes, we pack in as many links as we possibly can to the content we're talking about. And one of the things that we are trying to make a habit of now, every weekend that we're on with you folks, whenever you hear us, is the Internet Advisor takeaway, which is something either free or very inexpensive that you can just take away from our show and use yourself. And thanks to Cal Carson, we have a really interesting one today for everybody who banks with a certain financial institution.
Yeah, and it's really cool because this technology takeaway is really, really easy to use because all you have to do is reach in your pocket and pull out your ATM card from Bank of America. And on selected weekends during the year, and you can check on their website, they even got it broken down by state, by zip code, you can check out there and find out what museums in your area will allow you, if you walk up and show them your card, free admission to that museum.
So, if it's mom and dad, and mom has a card and you have a card, you each can get individual.
Everyone who has a card in their hand can do it.
Right.
So, if you wanted to really live dangerously, you get everybody in the family an ATM card. And you just walk up and you show your card and you get free admission. And they have places like the Henry Ford Museum in the Michigan area and that sort of thing where you can save a substantial amount of money.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And even if you just save, even if it's just a couple and, you know, you're taking your date out and you flash your card, hey, you just about got her dinner already paid for, so you won't have any problems later.
Now, do you have to go online to set this thing up, or there's probably more information at Bank of America?
You can get more detail at their website, but basically when you walk up, you just show them the card and they go, oh, okay, this is the weekend that we're letting you in for free, and they do process your card, and then they charge you for whatever other admissions that you have if you don't have cards for them.
And if you went to Bank of America, I'm sure you would find on their homepage as well links to the program, which is Museums on Us. That's the name of the program, Museums on Us.
Correct. Or you can go directly there by just typing in museums.bankofamerica.com.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that, sir. Hey, guys, before we wrap things up in this first hour, I wanted to go back to something we started off, and maybe somebody has just joined us. We were talking about, last week we talked about going back to college and getting some good equipment for the kids going back there, or maybe going back into high school, et cetera. And I was talking about some of the things that you can do to help prepare for when you hit campus with that new equipment, what to look for and expect, perhaps, with the security systems that are showing up on more and more university campuses, and how to prepare that young person to be safe while they're there. And to start off with, you talked about the fact that physically securing them with, like, for instance, if you have a laptop, you can get some of those locks that you can do with a cable on it.
Exactly, because after the first week, especially freshmen in the dorm, it's a free-for-all. The dorm doors are open, everyone's saying hi to each other, and, yeah, things walk off.
They grow legs and go very quickly. Along those lines, I told my granddaughters, they went to Central Michigan University, both of them have iPads, which they got as a gift as they're going away there, and they're using them around the campus there. I said, first of all, get a cover for this, please, so that it's not just sitting out naked, you know, so that it's wrapped up and it's inside, put it inside of a bag. But then the other thing I said is, you go on and make sure you have Find My iPad hooked up. And as a matter of fact, Gary, you talked about another one, which is the LoJack.
Right.
That you can get as well. So there are electronic securities that you can put on those devices.
That's right. And some of them you can even get that will take a photo if you have a webcam built into your laptop, which all of them do today.
Pretty much everyone.
You take a photo of the person that opens it up and tries to use it the first time. That's kind of interesting. That gets emailed back to then an account you can download, so you can not only locate the machine, you know who took it.
I think you said on U of M, doesn't it actually connect to the police that there is a...
Yes. Well, you can take and send it to a place where you can then forward it to the police.
Okay.
Now, one other accessory you want to give them when they go away, and I think it's probably already been mentioned, but I'll just bring it back up again. Make sure that they have at least one, possibly two USB thumb drives with them. Because I got the call once saying, hey, I was working on my term paper and it's on the computer and the computer's not working.
I got that same call.
I didn't know. Luckily, I was able to walk her through it, and we got it up and going again.
Yeah.
And I told her immediately, copy that paper onto your thumb drive as you do it every couple of days or whatever it is to it, so that if it does crash again, at least you can walk into the professor and say, my paper's on this drive here. If you take it off, you have it, as opposed to saying, it's on a broken computer. I can't get it.
Yeah, Ed, I remember you're telling, just going through that story with Sade about the crash. And
yep.
Everything's gone, Dad. The other thing now is we have cloud services that you can back up to as well. But the big word is backup.
Yep.
And that's the key. Gary, you've got a brilliant thing, which is to equip your child with an external hard drive that's already formatted to, it maybe has a copy of their program, but also it's automatically formatted to back up their computer.
That's right. All she has
as soon
to
as
do
they plug
is,
it in.
Yep, that's exactly right. Automatically.
And if you happen to have a Mac or something like that, what you do is you use something like either Carbon Copy Cloner or Super Duper. You back the entire drive right up to that external hard drive. And even if the internal dies, you can plug the other one back up into it, boot it up, and the computer runs just like it was running before.
Now, guys, I've also heard it said that just a good practice with backups is teach the kids not just something that's on a physical hard drive, okay, an external hard drive, but also to the cloud, because you want to have two places at least. If at all possible, that things are kept.
You can shove it up to the cloud. You can put it onto a second hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it anywhere you want to, as long as you have two copies of that backup and you separate the backups from the computer.
Now, what are some of the cloud services you have? SkyDrive, which is basically integrated within Windows 8 when that's going to be released.
And it's also available right now through now it's not Hotmail anymore. It's called Outlook.com.
Yep.
Right,
Outlook.com is a perfect example.
You've got Dropbox.
And you have Google now also has, what's it called, Google Drive? Am I right?
We got into a long discussion about this last week, I'm not getting involved.
But there are a number of ones that are out there. I think Rick Broida had some other suggestions as well.
Yes, and if you buy an Android device, I believe they also give you a 5 gigabyte cloud-based storage.
There's lots of it out there, but I guess the thing is, when you're sending the kids off, you know, and you want to have a couple of copies of things, that, as you said, the key thing is they got to be gotten away. As a matter of fact, Ed, you were talking about the fact of now preparing Chardé for going down, was it? Coming up soon.
Yeah, next Tuesday we're driving out.
Going down to Grand Valley. That you are going to do something for her before she takes off.
I'm
going to
make another image of her computer and update it. So I'll have her original image, but I'll also have an image of it, say, you know, as of tomorrow. And I'm going to make, I have a clone drive that I give her. So not only did I buy her like a 500 gigabyte hard drive, which is cheap, by the way, like $100.
Well, it's even less than that now, I think.
It probably is.
I saw them for like 50, 60, I thought. They've gone back down again, I think.
But then I put it in a drive tray.
Yeah.
Oh, no, okay. This is a little
different. What happens is that she has her clone of her hard drive in the drive tray, so she can use that as her backup medium. And if anything ever really happens and her computer crashes, she could pop that out of the tray, slide it into her existing computer.
Yeah, when Ed's talking about the drive tray, it is, with laptop computers, their hard drives are much smaller. It is the tray that it sits in that often is a component.
It's smaller than a Pop-Tart. Yep.
Exactly.
Just don't stick it in a toaster.
How about passwords? Just some quick thing about passwords, because my granddaughters ran into this at CMU.
That's a great point. And on the drive-in, you mentioned this. Have the kids prepare a password before they go out there.
Excellent.
And you brought that up. I'm like, I've never thought about preparing a password beforehand. That's a great idea.
Now,
I tell you another thing, too. Not only do you make a password for them, but you should put a second identity on the machine. I call it tech support with a password that I know. So that if she ever has any problems with it and her profile goes skunk, I can just tell her to log in as that one.
Beautiful. Beautiful advice. Well, good ones. Idea. Now, we've got some of these ideas, not all of them. You can get the podcast and catch all these things, but
you got to listen to us live if you want to hear the good stuff.
The link is on. It's under news. It's called College Internet Hookup Tips, and I put some of these things in there that you can go to. But I hope it's of service to you as well. By the way, speaking of being of service to you, we're going to take a pause, and when we come back, our phone lines are open for you at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. It's the Internet Advisor. Our second hour is dedicated strictly to helping you solve your problems with your computers. Get online and get in line, and we will get back to you just as soon as we can to start answering those questions again. The number, 800-859-0957. Sign up for our homepage at internetadvisor.net, or if you go there, you can also get us through iTunes and download the podcast straight from there as well. Back quickly to answer your questions with the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find more resources to protect your computer on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Folks are starting to gather, and we want to give you a chance to get your questions answered. It's your hour at 800-859-0957. That's a magic number. Get on the phone. Toll free from anywhere you can hear the sound of our voice. I've got a whole room full of people here just waiting to answer your questions. Again, 800-859-0957. Time to get some help for you out there. This is the time for you to get on the phones and get in contact with us to get your problem solved at 800-859-0957. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson, a whole group in here to answer your questions about your Windows machine, your Mac, whatever it may be. Speaking of Macs, by the way, we have for our weekly report of our dose of Apple rumors or what's in the barrel, we've also got Mr. Eric Anderson and his Mac Minute.
This week on the Mac Minute, Apple DVR rumors. Could the Apple TV become a full-blown DVR system? Some sources think so. Apple Insider says Apple is currently in talks with some cable providers to allow consumers to use a new Apple cable box to watch live TV and view other online content. The company has yet to sign a deal with any cable company. It will be interesting to see if it's even possible, since most cable companies do not own rights to the entertainment content that they provide. The late Apple founder Steve Jobs was also rumored to be against any partnership with a cable company due to their limited regional reach. As usual, this is just a rumor for now. More to come when Apple decides to talk about it. For the Internet Advisor, I'm Eric Anderson, and that's the Mac Minute, give or take a few seconds.
Thank you very much. More apples from the barrel. By the way, coming up in September, guys, I know it's going to be a matter of fact, this whole fall, I think, is going to be an incredible time to be around. Going to be a lot of fun because of the launches that will be going on with hardware from Apple. Not just that, I said Nokia's got a big launch coming up.
Nokia,
I think,
right.
In a couple weeks, I think.
The 5th of September.
Yeah, and that'll be huge because they are the ones who have been the big vendors for the Windows phone. Yep, Windows 8 phone's coming up. Apple's got a, who knows what's coming at Cal, but
it's a virtual technology tsunami coming.
Yes, exactly.
Say that fast.
Microsoft has got their new operating system and the new laptops and the Microsoft Surface.
Yeah, we don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but huge stuff coming.
All sorts of rumors, and if only half of them are true, it's going to be a wonderful fall.
I can make one comment because I have been fascinated this year about this whole business of cutting the cord, you know, getting out of the hookups where you're locked into very expensive contracts with cable companies and kind of reaching out to more and more content that's available for streaming free or with a subscription, like an $8 a month subscription with Netflix. So I've been looking at devices, and Rick Broida had been in before, our gadget guy from CNET, and we talked about the two big head-to-head competitors right now are the Roku HD and the Apple TV. And because I'm on a Mac, one of the things that's a big selling point, Cal, is for people who have a newer Mac hardware that's starting from like early 2011 on, and my MacBook Pro right now is from late 2011, we get to do with the operating system Lion right now and with Mountain Lion as well, this thing called AirPlay, which essentially means anything that's on our computer can, quote-unquote, magically be swept into our TVs without any wires through this Apple TV box.
It's sweet. It's really a nice addition to it. And I'm in the process in my head right now, but later on paper, I'm going to be laying out my network for the house where I'm going to set that all up and that sort of thing. And then got my eye on I had my eye on a 55-inch TV, but, you know, for some reason or another, this is funny. This kills me. My wife goes like, oh, don't you want to get a 60? I go like, wow, that sounds
Wait, hold it, your wife? Whoa, yeah.
All I need is a wallet to support it. But and then I walked into Best Buy the other day. You know what they have now? Sharp makes an 80-inch.
Oh, my word. That's an entire wall.
The thing is incredible. It's beautiful to look at, but for $4,500, I'm not buying a television that expensive.
Oh, my word.
But it is one heck of a look on the wall. I mean, you look at the 60 and you go like, oh, God, the 60 really isn't big enough anymore.
You know, you think about that. And the last bit of television that I've seen, now I don't watch much television, but the last television I seen was on about a 4-inch screen because I can put it on my phone and carry it with me.
Yep.
It's crazy. Wherever you want to go, whatever you want to do.
Isn't that incredible?
And whatever size you want it to be.
And videos going everywhere with people, like with your iPads or whatever the notebook you happen to pay. Some of the big smartphones now. A fellow in our neighborhood had one of these Droids that is enormous screen, like a 5-inch screen on this thing. It's just huge.
I think that's probably the Samsung Galaxy. You know, I'm still amazed that your wife said, don't you want to get a 60? Because I'm thinking the closest analogy I could come to is like when I was painting one of the bedrooms, she goes, don't you want to do the whole house?
There's something different about that. I can't put my thumb on it.
But
I don't know what was in her, but I'm going to try and keep it in her for a while. So it's working pretty good. Oh, and speaking of, when you said Mountain Lion,
yes,
I might as well mention this. If you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll find a link to the Mac group of Detroit. And our next meeting, and they'll have the date and everything out there for you, we're going to be talking about macOS 10.8 Mountain Lion and all the features that are in it, including AirPlay.
And it's Mac Group.
That's Mac Group Detroit.
Okay. We'll put that link up on our homepage, internetadvisor.net. There are a couple groups. Southeast Michigan Computer Organization, or
another
SEMCO, is another
that's
great group.
It's been around forever.
They've been around for over 35 years, I believe it is. That's the Windows side of things, and they have some great people there if you're interested in following that up.
That was back when PCs ran on kerosene. You had to use a rope to start them.
Well, both of those organizations, keep an eye on our homepage for that, because I know people listen to us at various times. Through the podcast or downloading it off our website. So you're not necessarily going to be catching us exactly at that date, but we'll try to post it up there. So keep an eye on that.
Of course.
And we'll keep you informed on those as well. Again, our phone number here is 800-859-0957. Let's begin our conversation with Sally, who is with us from Novi and is having printing problems. And Sally, what we're going to do is put you on hold because we're going to come back to you in just a moment after we take this quick break. I didn't hear the music, guys. Honest, I didn't hear the music. We have room for you, too, at 800-859-0957, and we'll be back with Sally in just a moment. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor. Time to get some answers for questions, and Sally, we're going to let it ride. Welcome to the Internet Advisor from Novi. You've got some problems with printing we hope we can help you with. How you doing, Sally?
Okay.
Very good.
I'm trying to print. I've had no problems until yesterday. Mm-hmm. From the laptop to the printer. And it can't seem to find the printer.
Mm-hmm. How do you connect with your printer? Is it by a wire? Is it wirelessly?
It's wireless, yes.
It's wireless, okay. And what kind of laptop do you have?
The Dell.
Okay, so you were running Windows, right?
Right. Windows XP.
Windows XP, okay. Mm-hmm. And this began when then, please?
Yesterday.
Okay, was there anything else that happened at the same time?
Nothing.
Okay. A power failure, possibly?
Pardon me?
Did you have a power failure?
No.
Okay, now, you're wireless from your laptop to the router, and is the printer wireless from the router to the printer?
Right.
And is it a HP printer?
No, it's a Brother.
Okay.
Oh, Brother.
And
multifunction.
Okay. Have you tried turning the Brother printer off and back on again?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect.
How about the router? Have you tried turning that off and back on again?
I did not, no.
Okay. So what I'd like you to do is I want you to turn off the printer again, and then I want you to turn the router off as well.
Well, my phone is running through the printer, so if I turn the printer off, is that going to cut me off?
Yes, it would.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
So,
don't do it. Don't do it now.
So we'll do this. So I want you to do this after you hang up.
The other thing is that more than likely, if you have a phone through your router, you're not going to be able to just power off on a switch. There's a reset button in the back because it has a battery in there so that it gives you 15 minutes of phone.
Okay.
So you actually have to press that reset. That way, it'll reset it, and hopefully the printer and your cable modem will re-communicate.
Well, on my list, when I look under for the printer, there are several listed in there. I know they shouldn't be in there. I must have.
You mean when you look under, when you open up your XP and go to printers, there has a number of them there, right?
Right.
And some of them are ones you either don't recognize or ones that used to be there?
Yes.
Okay.
And my printer is listed there as the default.
Okay.
But it's still not recognized.
Okay. Then there's a good chance that there's a number of links in this chain. And what the guys are suggesting is one of the weakest links at times can be that router because that's where it's connecting through.
Okay.
Yeah. And so what I want you to do after you hang up with us is that you're going to turn off the router. You're going to turn off the printer as well. And then you're going to turn the router on first.
Now, excuse me, but what Ed had said before is remember, but this one sounds like an all-in-one unit because she's got the phone through it.
Okay.
So it's got a self-contained battery. So in order to really reset it, there's a little button at the back and the bottom. Have you got AT&T?
Yeah.
Yeah. At the top of that tower, if you go right to the bottom of it, I think that's where the reset button is. And you would press that in. That way, it will actually reset it. Because if you just unplug it, the battery inside of it will keep that setting.
Correct.
So if you really want to reset it, that little button on the back.
And then after you press that reset button, you're going to wait about a minute. And then once the minute is over, then you're going to go over and turn your Brother printer back on. And what's going to happen is your printer is going to go look for the router. They're going to talk to each other, hook back up again. And then hopefully when you turn on your laptop and connect to the router, you'll be able to print.
Now, will she have to reboot her PC at the same time, around the same time?
It won't hurt if she does.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Right. Now, if all this fails, what you may want to do is then find your original Brother software so that it can reload and then rediscover this wireless printer because, during the installation, it had to discover the wireless printer and set addresses up. And if what Kel's outlined fails, then you have to go one step further, and that is reload the software.
And maybe as another step, and I've worked with brothers that had this wireless printers, you might have to go back to shut the brother's printer off, come back on, and then there's a menu on it that lets you discover the wireless network again.
Yeah.
So it'll go back through it. So in each of these cases, what we want to do is we want to restart the wireless system, and after that, then both have the printer find it, and then get your laptop to find the system again, and then a happy marriage between all of them. Okay, Sally?
Thank you. May I ask another quick question?
You know, hon, we've got a lot of people waiting here, and I really want to be fair to them, too. So what I could suggest is you can get further questions to us either through our forum or there's a contact us form on the line, too, okay?
Yes.
All right, Sally. Thank you so much. Appreciate that, because we do want to get some of the other people who are hanging out here waiting to talk with us as well. And again, the number 800-859-0957.
And we'll try to help Sally off the air.
Absolutely. Cindy from Westland, how you doing?
Okay, Foster, how are you guys doing?
Very good. It says IE is freezing.
Yeah.
Turn down the air conditioning.
You know, I tried that and it didn't help.
Okay. IE is not freezing today. It's usually cold in here. But
IE is freezing.
I have a Dell Inspiron laptop, about 4 years old, XP, brand new hard drive as of May because the hard drive crashed. Mm-hmm. I had this problem periodically before the old hard drive on the old one, but it's getting worse now. And I don't know if maybe I've got a bad version of Internet Explorer or what's going on. Mm. I can be doing whatever I want to, and I like on Facebook, when you guys were on with the Guatemala and everything mm-hmm. here a little while ago, I wanted to post on Facebook, everybody, you know, check out Internet Explorer WJR or mm-hmm. go to the Facebook or to the website.
Right.
And I'm typing and it froze.
Mm.
And it freezes. And I can walk away for 3 minutes and come back and it hasn't moved. And the only thing that I can do is to get the task manager up, close it out, you know, end program now, and then restart it again. That is the only way to get out of it. Mm. And it's happening now. It can happen 3, 4, 5 times a day.
So could she just take an uninstall? Which version are you on again?
Of Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Good question. Hang on a second.
Probably eight.
Yeah, Internet Explorer 8.
Oh, it's 8. Okay.
So maybe it could be fixed by just installing 9. What do you think?
That or she could uninstall
8.
8 by going into Control Panel, Add, Remove Programs, uninstalling it. But
she'll
you know
get
what
7
I did for
back
my
at
wife?
That point. Won't you get 7 back?
She'll
at that
get
point?
7 back.
Right. It automatically reverts back to 7. Then you can install 8, and then you can install 9 if you'd like.
Right. And what I did for 9. My wife, because XP, and my wife still runs XP on an older laptop, but it's probably 6 years old, not 4. So Christmas is coming around the corner. Is that
note to self?
What I did is I put Chrome on hers.
Yeah.
And she does all of her surfing now through Google Chrome or Firefox, mm-hmm. and that eliminated those freezes. But hers wouldn't last 3 minutes. More than likely, the freezes are due to add-ons or plugins within Internet Explorer. And what Gary suggested would probably correct that. But put another browser on there, too, and without using Internet Explorer at all on a Windows XP system, try Google Chrome or Firefox. It'll import all your settings, all your favorites, your homepage, and it might solve your issue. And you may decide, I'm just going to use Chrome from now on and try to get another 4 more months out of this computer.
Can the Mac guy toss an idea out
there? Put a new hard drive in.
What about if she went in and just reset back the factory factory default?
And Cal has the simplest solution right there. There
just to try that first.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm a Mac guy.
Oh.
I'm going to walk through the IE process.
No, you're not. You're AC/DC.
So within Internet Explorer, you could select Tools, Internet Options, and then you go to the Advanced tab, and then you do have the ability of selecting Reset, and it'll reset it back to factory settings. And it'll also eliminate all plugins that have been on there.
Yeah.
So if you have, like, Yahoo Mail, and we had one of our people that emailed us into the forums had this question, that they were not able to email through Yahoo Mail anymore. So whenever they clicked on, you know, contact us on a website and their Yahoo Mail wouldn't launch, it's because they didn't have the Yahoo Mail toolbar within Internet Explorer anymore. Because I had told them, you know, you go to the Advanced tab and reset it. Well, the Yahoo toolbar was disabled, so that function stopped working.
Right.
But that might be the first and easiest way to try and resolve the problem.
Okay,
Cindy. See that here, reset. And then if that doesn't work, then go into Control Panel and remove Explorer, and then...
If you'd like, and you, what you'll do is you'll get Internet Explorer 7 back.
Okay.
I should say, Cindy, by the way, there were a lot of problems between 8, Internet Explorer 8 and Windows XP, so I would really recommend get another browser. Get Chrome and see how it works for you, okay?
Okay.
Thank you
all right,
so much
great.
For calling.
Thank you, guys.
All right, take care. Thank you once more for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And I'd remind you about a resource that we have, of course, which is our homepage, internetadvisor.net. But in addition to that, we also have a Facebook page. And throughout the week, we've been posting things there as well. And there's an article I want to talk about in just a minute. But you can like us on the Facebook, and you all can catch up with some of the things that we're doing there as well. But the real kind of resource that we have for you folks out there is our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Speaking of resources, the one right now is that we're on live to answer your questions at 800-859-0957. And Dorothy from Royal Oak,
hi.
How may we help you to connect again?
I'm not able to get down to that Dream Cruise, so I got you on.
There you go. There you
go. Well, thank you for that.
Now, realize you can take us down to the Dream
Cruise. I always go to church at 4:30 Mass, and darn, I always miss you.
Well, we have the podcast, so for folks that that need to listen.
I guess I sort of had an answer to the question about the printer, but that was the second question. The first question I wanted to know is, I have a new laptop. My children think that I should have, you know, the latest thing, so they bought a Toshiba.
Oh, good. Good for
and,
them.
And I have just a year-old Dell that I have down the basement, but I can't go up and down the stairs that much, so.
Okay.
So what I want to know is, how careful do you have to be when you use a flash drive and putting it in, and how do you know when to take it out and how to take it out?
You're talking about physically putting it in and physically removing it. Okay.
So if it's a brand new flash drive from the store, you shouldn't have a problem. If you get it from somebody else, especially a lot of people get flash drives now from, they'll go to...
promotional items.
Yeah, they'll go to a convention or something like that and get a promotional item. Got to be real careful and scan those first.
The one I have was very expensive. I bought it.
Oh, okay. So, you should be able to just slide it into the drive. You shouldn't have a problem.
Well, she wants to know the procedure and how to remove it.
So what you do is...
removing it that I'm concerned about.
You can right-click on it, and it will come back, and one of the options is eject, and you can eject it.
Oh,
but
so
most
go,
people
my
just,
computer, right?
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes, you get
no,
a little
you're, you're right, but just my computer, and then you find your flash drive there, and you right mouse click and eject, or there could be an icon in your drive tray.
Yeah, I was going to say, what operating system are you using again?
If it's a brand
XP.
I think down on the right hand side in not the launch tray. What is that called?
Taskbar.
The taskbar, which is on the bottom right hand corner of your Windows XP, there should be a little icon down there that indicates that you've got something plugged into your computer. It looks like a little bug.
it's green in color. It's like a little green square. And if you hover over it, it'll say USB.
Yeah.
And then when you right mouse click, it'll list all your USB devices.
And it says disconnect, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah. But the way Gary describes is universal. It works with any version of the operating system.
Well, those tutorials say that there's an arrow, a green arrow. And I couldn't find a green arrow on here. And I didn't know whether it was last night.
You could just unplug them. I mean, I've been that way as well, and I've done that, but I've lost a few flash drives doing that. Uh-huh. And I've always wondered, is that because I pulled it out without ejecting it?
I don't think so.
Here's the other way,
so
too.
So you could teach them bad habits, because a lot of times I'll just pull it out.
The other way to do it is, don't worry about it being stuck in there. When you're all done with your computer at the end of the day, when you shut the computer down and it turns off, you can pull it out safely then.
Because Windows has this ability to hot swap. Am I right, guys? Mm-hmm. That's what it's called.
Right.
In other words, you can plug things in and unplug things without risking things. And a Mac, it'll give you a scolding for doing that. It pops up and says, something was disconnected. That's because, as Ed said, sometimes you can not know it, but there's a process going on. Let's say a file is transferring, and you didn't know it hadn't finished, and you can foul things up completely at that point.
I didn't know how I was going to print from my laptop on the unit I have downstairs.
Ah.
Now what do I do?
So you're on your laptop.
That's why I got the. I have the laptop upstairs. I broke my hip.
I understand.
Run up and downstairs.
I understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I'll bring up printers, but.
You know something? You got some generous kids. Can I make a suggestion to them? That they get you a nice little multifunction machine for not very much money. They put it upstairs with you.
Yeah. Well, she may already have
wirelessly.
One. Wirelessly. Oh, yeah, right. Her printer may already support wireless and she doesn't even know it. So really, it's a matter of asking your kids to look at it. Or you could write down the model that's on your printer right now and go to the manufacturer's website, if it's Brother or HP, and they'll usually tell you, this is a wireless network printer or network ready printer.
Okay.
Dorothy,
and what is that router that you were talking about? What is a router between?
Thank
I have
you. AT&T. Good question. A router is just simply what it's kind of like a traffic cop for the digital signals in your house.
Okay.
And
okay.
It allows you to go through the intersection, if you will, and connect your computer to the internet or connect with wirelessly with something else there. So you have to have wires running all over the house.
And
that's the neat thing about it.
And she already has one. If she has a laptop upstairs with no wires on it, she already has a wireless router.
Right. Well, I think this area was set up for wireless, too.
Well, in Royal Oak, it was at one point. I don't think the municipal Wi-Fi exists anymore in Royal Oak. So what you're on is a wireless setup that your kids have put up for you.
And
most likely.
We don't know for sure whether her printer's wireless or not. Mm. And if it's not wireless, just have those fine children of yours bring the printer upstairs with a USB cable, and you plug it right in, and you can print upstairs.
Do you know what kind of printer it is, Dorothy? Do you know what it?
Yeah.
What
like
is
HP?
It called? It's an HP. Okay. Do you know what HP what it is?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
5600 maybe?
And do you know how old it is?
Yeah, that printer's about 5 years old.
Okay.
That's borderline then.
It may not be wireless, but you know what?
But can you get a small one?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Ah.
And a small one upstairs, because it doesn't matter if you can print to it downstairs if you can't go down and get the paper.
Right.
So you got to get that upstairs and make it easy on you.
And they are really, as I said, you've got some generous kids there. If they want to keep you up with the latest technology.
And
then
for around $100, you get a really nice one.
For $100, you can do it very easily. And make it a wireless one, too, and they'll help you to set that up. And then when it's set up through your router, then you won't have to worry about connecting wires to different things, and you'll have a great time doing the printing that way.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had a great time just listening to you today.
Well, thank you very much. And you know, you've asked some great questions, and I'm glad you asked them, because there are so many people out there who will kind of sit and scratch their heads and not ask those questions.
I mean, it's a simple thing, but I didn't want to hurt what I've got and have a problem. Sure. But I do want to tell you something.
What's that?
The guests that you had on for mm-hmm. Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
Sally, when she came on, she mentioned it too.
Mm-hmm.
They were fabulous, what
Aren't
they were talking about.
Isn't that fantastic? Isn't it incredible?
I'm a Rotarian, and I know the people that I work with mm-hmm. would love to go to hear her.
Wonderful.
Or to hear them, rather.
Right.
Do they do speaking engagements?
I bet they do. And I bet John would find any opportunity he got to share his message. A great one. And
really?
Again, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll have a link there to his organization, the Adaptive Technology Collaborative. And then there's also an email address there, info, and then it gives the address that you would send that request for.
What was that technology again?
It's called Adaptive Technology Collaborative. But again, if you go to internetadvisor.net, right there on the homepage, you'll find all that information for you.
And the other thing you'll find on that homepage, Dorothy, is that we have podcasts of the shows. So if you go to Mass at 4:30, you can download it and listen to it and still be, sin free.
Oh, good. I take things down in shorthand.
Oh, my goodness.
I missed a lot of the words.
Well, and by the way, that's the value of the podcast, really, that you can go back and listen
to
something
really
in detail.
I really enjoyed that. And I think it's a marvelous thing that that those people over there can have something that we would never think of, getting power out of the sun to freeze things.
Isn't that astounding? It blows me away when I hear that. With all locally developed
material. Yeah, and they can build it themselves. That's wonderful.
And the girls doing the
weaving.
Same thing.
The weaving, too. Isn't that it's something? Well, you've been a delightful guest, Dorothy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful questions.
Well, I've enjoyed you for years. And I'm 86, and I've been at the computer for 15 years.
Wow.
That's wonderful.
I'm a slow learner.
No. You're taking it up at the right time.
That is absolutely great.
But it's given you such a wonderful extension of your life and of for your marvelous intellect as well. So thanks again for sharing with us.
Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. I feel rejuvenated listening to somebody like that talk. That's so wonderful. Okay, let's go to Jack from Grosse Pointe. Jack, you'd like some help with cleanup.
Yes. Last week, you mentioned a site, Derek's.com or something like that.
Oh, Derek's Boot and Nuke for cleaning up a hard drive?
D-A-R-I-K.
Wait a minute. Is it E as in Edward?
D as in dog.
D as in dog.
And it's A-R-I-K.
Okay. And then .com?
S. B-N... And you know what?
Let me make sure. Hang on. We're going to put you on hold. What I'm going to do is we'll come back and answer that question specifically for you again about that cleanup because it's an important one. I'll also post it on our homepage for people who are looking for it. We'll get the exact link to Derek's Boot Nuke for cleaning up. We'll tell you what that's all about in just a moment. Thank you so much for having joined us for this edition of the Internet Advisor. Once again, we're there all the time for you, 24-7 at internetadvisor.net, with lots of helpful information and links, especially from our program, the show notes there. If you don't get to listen to us live when we're on the air, then of course, there's a great resource in our podcast, and you can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, which, by the way, has been updated to be absolutely wonderful. And I highly recommend you getting the podcast through that. It goes up almost instantaneously. By the way, thank you to our lady of the telephones, Annie Nichols. Thank you so much for your help. That sweet voice there is hers that answers your calls. And also, Rick Lesinski, thank you so much for spinning the dials and wishing me happy birthday today. That was a very nice way of doing that. Okay, let's get back out and let's talk with what we were talking before with Jack. And Jack, you asked a question about something we mentioned last week, which is how to completely scrub your hard drive, right?
Correct.
And we had mentioned a company called, or a piece of software called Derek's Boot and Nuke software. And what I did during the break is I went online and I loaded that onto our homepage. So now you don't need to take it down in shorthand or anything else. Simply go to internetadvisor.net. And if you look down our show notes, you'll find Derek, that's D-A-R-I-K, apostrophe S, Derek's Boot and Nuke software. And you'll find the link to that there.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Glad we could help
you. Thanks a lot. You guys do a great job.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And that is a wonderful resource to use to clean up a hard drive if you're going to donate your machine.
Exactly. The purpose of that, by the way, is not just to tweak things. It's to completely erase.
Yeah. Make sure you look at the disclaimers before you click the yes button and make sure you definitely want to clean that drive completely because there's no turning back.
You only make that mistake once.
But it does do that. So if you want to then donate the machine, you can do it.
That's what it's good for.
Cleans it up to
military specs.
DOD specs.
Yep.
Martha from Holly, glad to have you with us here. You've got a question about an email.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We just changed servers. Mm-hmm. Is that the right word?
Yeah, providers. Right.
Well, providers.
Providers.
That's
good
providers.
Word.
Yep.
And I don't know how to send my emails that I presently have over to the new spot. I called the new spot, and they said bring up the old one and just hit on the address and then forward. Well, the forward I was looking at was when I open an individual
one. For an individual email. No, you're looking for something that's a little different than that.
So
send everything to Gmail.
Right.
And that worked.
Okay.
So what did you have before and what are you moving
ATT.
to?
ATT.net.
You had ATT before and what are you moving to now?
Reagan.com.
Okay.
And the AT&T, did you have webmail or did you have...
it was probably webmail because it was probably Yahoo. Right.
Yes, right? It was through Yahoo.
Yeah. And it was webmail, like Gary's asking?
Yep.
You got to it through the internet,
if
right?
It's through Yahoo,
through the web
browser. I don't have anything else.
Right.
I'm not very fancy.
Okay.
You know, I think her first suggestion was probably the best is... Cal, correct me if I'm wrong. If you're going to be switching back and forth, you may want to get an email package that's completely independent of your internet service provider. So a lot of people, what they do is they go to Gmail.
Yeah,
right?
I've heard of that.
And then they can use that as their collaborator or what's the term you use? It'll basically suck in all the email accounts that you have. You could have
it's your hub for all your email.
Right. So,
thank you.
If she gets a Gmail account or something like that.
Well, I think she needs is an email client. And in the email client, she could hook up her Yahoo account. She could hook up her Reagan account. She can hook up all those accounts and have them feed to that client.
But doesn't Gmail do that same thing?
Yes. It can.
Okay, I've never done it that way.
So you
can
actually have Gmail suck in all the email for her.
Yep.
Is that correct?
That's what I would do.
I do that with Office 360, for instance. It's a Microsoft product. I do the same thing there.
She wants to get to Reagan mail? I've not heard of that.
Why do you want to use the Reagan mail?
Well, she has to get off Yahoo because they're going to turn off her account sometime soon. But the choice is, like you were saying.
Oh, I see.
Do you want to go with Reagan mail or do you want to finally, you know, not be your ISP dependent and go with something completely
like
independent?
Gmail.
Like Hotmail or Gmail.
Right.
Or something along those lines.
Did that make sense?
Well, I understood that nobody read it on Reagan. You asked why I...
Right.
I know what she's talking about. You pay a subscription price for Reagan mail, $40 a year, and what it does is that they give you a mail, a place where you can park your mail and stuff like that, but unlike with Google and the other ones where they scan your mail and try to put ads to you, they do not do any of that type of activity.
Oh, that's cool.
But you pay a $40 premium for it.
But you're paying a premium for it. To be honest with you, I don't know whether it's worth that.
So that's the reason why she needs to get an email client to be able to handle that. Because if she channels it through Google Mail or something like that, she's not gaining any. She's losing what she's actually paying the $40 for, and that's the privacy.
Oh, she's paying that money regardless.
She's paying $40 for privacy a year.
So why do you have a specific reason that you want to do that?
No, I just...
But Cal is saying
she's buying privacy.
I didn't hear her response. I'm sorry.
I just thought it was more private. That's all.
Yeah, and so you don't want to go with Gmail because that will not be private. They have the ability of scanning that, and
they do that machine wise.
Yeah,
right?
They do.
Nobody reads it.
No one reads my AT&T mail either.
Right.
But they could. They're scanning it as well. So if you go with Reagan mail, it's guaranteed. You're paying for that to be private. You won't be part of a statistic like you would with Gmail or anything else.
Do you do that?
I don't do it.
And do you care?
From ATT to...
I'm sorry, repeat your question again.
No, not really, Gary.
Hang on, guys.
I got to do the hub.
Okay, so ask your question again, please, Martha. I'm sorry.
Is it possible to go directly from ATT to Reagan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm ready.
Yeah, you can forward it to Reagan.
Yeah, but what she's saying is individually she's going to have to forward every individual mail one at a time. What she's looking for and what Cal alluded to is putting a piece of client software on her PC like Microsoft Outlook or Microsoft Live Mail Client or in previous versions of the operating system, Outlook Express.
Right.
And that would suck everything down from the AT&T, and then she can then copy that up to the Reagan mail.
Correct.
Or she could just
leave
it right on her client, and then just from that point on, only pull and send her mail on Reagan mail.
But the only precaution is with that, and she could certainly do that, is that she had her mail web-based, and it was available from any PC, and it was backed up online.
The Reagan mail is web-based as well.
Okay, but if we put that Outlook client on there, it may suck it all down as well, or
it will suck it down as well, but she doesn't have to use the client at that point.
Right.
Hopefully I will get this done in several weeks, and then I can just cancel the other things and go direct.
For Martha's sake, too, can't you simply, for instance, with the Reagan mail, go in and say, please forward all my mail from my AT&T account to me. Here's my address, and here's my password.
Okay, that's a good idea.
I mean, you're telling Reagan Mail then essentially to pull all of her email from Yahoo.
Yeah.
So you give her your address, you give her the password, and then it just pulls that in.
Have you contacted Reagan Mail about this?
Well, I was talking to them, but I didn't. But she said all I had to do was you can go to your
your old address
and forward it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
and
the thing
forward
is
it. But it sounded like that was a individual.
Yes, and it is.
Yeah, and that's going to take a while.
Yeah, exactly. And also what Ed had said before is that you may have had that account with AT&T Yahoo as part of your total service, and that might go away. So what you can do then is on your Reagan side, you can simply say, here's my address, here's the password, bring it in.
Well, she said that she called them, and they said that wasn't available.
No, I didn't.
She didn't ask.
Oh, she did not ask that specific question.
And I'd like to make sure that people realize that you really don't need to do this. Nobody's reading your mail.
No.
I don't want people to be scared about this. This is a marketing tactic that Reagan Mail has put together. Right. That's all it is.
Right. Oh,
all the rest of us do it differently.
We do. I think all of us use web-based mail. You know, we've run out of time here, Martha, but thank you. You kind of opened a can of worms here for us. Hope we've given you a little bit of help on this. Guys, thanks so much again. Maybe we'll try to...
I hate it when they scare people like that.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, especially if they take money off you for that. Guys, thanks so much. Gary Baker, Edward Dale, Cal Carson, it's been a great birthday, folks. Thanks for joining us here at Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.